Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. Had a great program today and looking forward to learning some important lessons and strategies, perhaps. I'm Neil Stavem and Ryan Thomas sitting there at the controls. And Ryan, today is a program that this could probably help us. We would, our working relationship could probably significantly improve by the end of this hour.
Oh, this is a great opportunity for both of us, Neil. I'm very excited.
Because we're going. This is the first time in American history when we have four different generations working side by side in the workplace. And what? I'm in the boomer generation, and you are in the millennials, right?
Gen Y.
All right.
Yes, sir.
And so we're going to learn today why we can't all just get along.
Well, that's...
Why you can't do it my way. That's pretty much how it is.
But is it just going to be that, or are there going to be solutions too? Because I feel like I might be depressed.
Sure. Well, we'll try and keep that hanging over the whole interview. But no, actually, we're going to talk about a new book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places That They Come Apart. So I think we'll take some time to review those 12 places, and I guess we'll see. We'll do our own checklist probably, and see if see how this works. So, but we're going to talk a little bit about just the different generations and how they communicate, make decisions, and dress code. I haven't said anything. I mean, you're looking good today.
Not saying anything about the
dress code.
You look very dapper too.
Thank you. And okay. We'll get the fun at work and work ethic and respect. We'll get into today's discussion because that will be all that we can do. And I'm looking forward to introducing today's guest as we jump in and learn more about sticking points and learn from a generational coach. This is the first time in American history that we have four different generations working side by side in the workplace. The traditionalists born, say, 1945, the baby boomers born from 45 to 65, of which I'm in that category, Gen X born between 1965 and 1980, and the millennials born between 1980 and 2000.
Wow.
And we're going to find out if it's possible for all of us to get along. And we've got somebody who is a leading expert on understanding generational differences and transforming negative work environments and employees. Hayden Shaw is with us today, full-time speaker and consultant for Franklin Covey, specializing in leadership, execution, clarify that. So that's one of the solutions. We're going to get to and personal productivity. Hayden, welcome to today's Connecting Faith.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we should probably clarify the PR material there about the execution. That was...
That's right. That's only a last resort.
Sure, that's right. Hayden's he's spoken to thousands of people and worked in more than 1,500 businesses, from Fortune 500 companies to startups and not-for-profits and government agencies, and has written a fascinating new book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. And it's from Shaw Publishers, a subsidiary of Tyndale. And Hayden, maybe just a little bit of background. Is this something that you were in the workplace and discovered it? And so, or is it just through your consulting, discovering that these issues kept coming up all the time? Give us a little personal background for you.
Well, that's right. I've been researching this for over 20 years because you could see with the baby boomers and their parents a real difference in the way people responded to things. And then, sure enough, being I'm right on the edge of Generation X and the baby boomers. As the Xers came along, leaders and organizations called them slackers, and so that wasn't maybe the most welcoming way for a new generation to be heralded into the workplace. And so, I've always been fascinated with why is it that one generation can just be irritated when another generation is just being themselves.
Well, you know, I guess there have always been generational differences, right? So why is it an issue now?
There have always been generational differences. A couple of reasons why it's more of an issue. We have more of them in the workplace simultaneously. For most of history, you've had the people with the power and the money, then you've had the people raising the adults raising the children, and if they just waited their turn, then they would be in great shape. And then the children grew up and became the adults, and a whole other cycle passed on. But now that people are living longer, you have what our family reunion has. You have younger people who don't want to go to the place we've gone to every year for 20 years. And you have older generations saying, well, you guys can do anything you want when we're gone. But my parents and my cousin's parents are all still alive. And so they have people in their 80s. And that simply didn't happen 50 or 60 years ago. The younger generations didn't wait as long to wait their turn. And so with four generations means that age-old process of waiting your turn just doesn't work the same way today, and we've got to find a new way of getting four generations to play nice in the sandbox.
We're talking today about sticking points, how to get four generations working together in the 12 places they come apart, and we'll kind of review some of those 12 places. But maybe we'll, to start, can we just review a few characteristics? Are there some general, and I know in the book you kind of set it up well with describing, you know, some of the issues, the characteristics, and then we get into, you know, breaking it down for some specific issues, but what are some of the characteristics and why the waiting your turn thing isn't working out so well?
Yeah, a couple of characteristics. Traditionalists were shaped by the Great Depression and World War II, and so they tend to be more optimistic about large government programs. In that, there was the confidence born of the great success that happened in World War II and the number of people who were saved from starvation by some incredibly powerful government, large government programs, that bigger than the United States at least had ever seen before, and so that was one of those characteristics shaped by their real skepticism about debt and about borrowing, and their confidence that hard work and sacrifice would move themselves ahead. Well, that follows up with the baby boomers, who grew up in a time of much greater plenty, and with a booming economy, and so they focused much more on inner space than outer space, to go back to an old movie title. They focused on their own self-exploration rather than survival and security. And that's one of the reasons they've been called the me generation through the years. X has come along, and the world was changing, and suddenly it wasn't as optimistic. Tinkerbell was no longer flashing pixie dust across the television screen on a sunny night. Instead, television shows as well as movies got edgier, and unemployment was a bigger factor. Global competition was a bigger factor, and so Generation X learned not to take any of that for granted, and the millennials came along, and they were suddenly baby on board. Signs began to appear in the back of minivans, and parents were much more focused on their children than previous generations had been. And so here was a group of people who had high expectations, who had baby boomers for parents, and they received a lot more attention, a lot more a focus on self-esteem, and therefore were a more optimistic as well as cautious generation because of all the security issues they've grown up surrounded by.
So we go from sort of hard work and sacrifice to self-exploration, then maybe pessimistic, and then back to optimistic.
That's right. Now, the recession has taken a little bit of the edge off of the optimism of the second half of the millennials, at least economically, but still an optimistic generation that working together with new communication tools will allow us to solve problems. So still an optimistic generation about the potentials of things. And in some cases, eager to get their hands on the controls after, in many of their minds, the baby boomers have not done so well with some of the big challenges that we face.
Is this an issue primarily because there's still a great deal of sort of business leadership that are boomers or traditionalists? So I mean, do people in leadership of all ages need to be aware of these differences?
Well, interestingly, people of all ages need to be aware of this. Certainly, the surprise to many people come as a new generation enters the workforce. For example, as the millennials are coming into the workforce and now in larger numbers, and as boomers are starting to retire, organizations are beginning to say, hey, what is different about these about this younger generation? Why are some of the things that they do, why are they doing that, and how do we understand that so we don't find ourselves making work too frustrating a place? For example, one senior vice president, a boomer, said to me, I got a question for you. When a baby boomer is late for work, they call you on your cell phone, they give you an explanation of why they're late, they promise they'll never be late again, and give you an action plan. When one of my millennials, very high-performing millennials, get the job done, but when they come in late, they usually come in 20 minutes late without an explanation or carrying a Starbucks. And so two completely different ways of looking at this idea of timeliness. And organizations are trying to, and leaders, especially older leaders, are trying to figure out which things should I get upset about and what are just differences in the generations that I need to understand and accommodate to.
Or if they came in late, they'd text you. They wouldn't call you, right?
That's precisely right. People don't call off work. As Payless, one of the clients we work with, Payless Shoe Source, discovered they text. And some of the boomer managers insisted that they call, and the younger generation said, well, I'm quitting if you guys are this out of touch.
Wow. Okay. So these are real issues, aren't they? I mean, that just give us some examples. I mean, you talk about 12 sticking points. Maybe we'll just run through them, and then we'll unpack them more in detail later. But just where are some of the tension points?
Well, gotcha. Let's just do them in alphabetical order. Communication. They're texting me, and I'm trying to call them, and we seem to be having some communication gaps. So the different approaches to communication. And number two, decision-making. You have to be around here a while before you can join in the decision-making. Or, hey, not everybody has the same experience, but everybody's an equal and equally as valuable. So a collaboration or a hierarchical decision-making process. Number three, dress code. Are flip-flops okay if we're not in front of older clients, or is there a professional code? And as one client said, we have spent a year and a half trying to define what's a flip-flop and what's a sandal. We've taken up top executive time trying to make that fine distinction. And so number four, feedback. No news is good news is what the traditionalists often said, versus the millennials, who are seen as wanting considerably more feedback than previous generations. Number five, fun at work. Do you get your work done and then have a little bit of fun, or do you stop and have some fun all the way along throughout the day? Two different approaches to when you get dessert, so to speak. And then number six, knowledge transfer. Now that the boomers are leaving the workplace, how do we take what they've learned and hand it on to the next generation? Boomers are oral in the way they learn. They listen to stories, whereas Xers and millennials tend to be more written. They want to look at frequently asked questions. And so the generations don't transfer knowledge in the same way, and that's causing some trouble. Number seven, loyalty. Why did anybody stay around anymore? Why do people leave when the going gets tough? Younger generations say, when's my next promotion? Where are the options to move forward? And you boomers weren't quite as loyal as you remember being. Number eight, meetings. Younger generations think, can't we just type some of this up in a summary? Why do we have to sit around here and do the death march of everybody reporting out on what they accomplished last week? I think I'm going to pull the stylus out of my smartphone and poke it through my eye. And so number nine, policies. How do we set policies for generational sticking points now that there are four generations so that somebody's not busy either emailing, complaining, or tweeting how stupid this new policy is because it doesn't fit their generation? How do you set policies with four generations? Number 10, respect. How long do you have to be around here before you've paid your dues and can be taken seriously? Number 11, training. We all know that generations learn differently, and so how do we accommodate them all effectively? And lastly, and the one that comes up most often, work ethic. And coming in late, carrying a Starbucks versus calling ahead with an action plan, or working from home at 2 in the morning versus being in at the office at 8. What's good work ethic and what's not? But the older generations frequently say that the younger two generations don't have the same work ethic, and the younger two generations will often disagree. So those are the 12, and those are the big issues that come along with
it. Fascinating discussion with Hayden Shaw, who's a business speaker and generational expert, talking about his book, Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together and the 12 Places They Come Apart. We'll hear more from Hayden Shaw in just a moment, right here on Connecting Faith.
Stay tuned. More of the best of Connecting Faith in just moments.
As parents, you always want to know what or whom is influencing your children. While most of us have a good handle on this in the real world, did you ever think about who could be influencing your child online? Zabra is a new way for you to protect and monitor your kids' influences while on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Zabra works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to alert you to potentially harmful conversations on social media. For more information, visit Zabra.com. That's Zabra.com to get started today.
Just about everybody and everything seems to be on Facebook now.
But in the midst of the soda companies, celebrities, and clothing stores, find an online community built on encouragement and faith.
My Faith Radio is on Facebook. Just type My Faith Radio into your Facebook search box.
Now you're one quick click away from faith resources, daily encouragement, and a chance to interact with your favorite Faith Radio hosts.
Visit us at Facebook.com/MyFaithRadio.
Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and today we've connected with Hayden Shaw, a leading expert on understanding generational differences and transforming negative work environments and employees. Full-time speaker and consultant for Franklin Covey, specializing in leadership, personal productivity methodologies, and before that he was a minister for 9 years. Has a seminary degree, and he's written a book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart.
Maybe talk about typical responses to managing the differences, and then you offer some steps, I think 5 steps, for leading through. So maybe we talk about what sort of typically happens and then what a better solution is.
Well, got it. Well, you know, one of the things that we do when we respond to generational differences, first, is we just ignore them, because when a new generation is beginning to happen, we don't really notice it, and they tend to blend in because there's so few of them. You know that old saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. So when millennials first came in the workplace, they weren't asking if they could wear flip-flops. They instead were dressing the part because there were so few of them. Well, over about 5-year period of time, a new generation begins to go to lunch with people of their generation, and then the questions begin to come up. Well, why do we have to do this, and why do we have to do that? And so organizations then try to fix the generation. Well, let's explain why you're not getting it yet. Well, after about 10 years, when there's enough of a new generation in the workplace, the organization begins to cut a deal. Organizations did that with the baby boomers. Baby boomers didn't particularly like ties, and so baby boomers began to ask, why do we have to wear ties? And organizations said, because you have to. And so boomers started leaving and going to organizations where they didn't have to wear ties. And so companies began to cut a deal. Some days you have to wear them. Some situations you have to wear them. Some occupations have to wear them, and others don't. And so now it's not at all uncommon to see a couple people in ties, but the vast majority of men not wearing a tie in meetings or situations. And so the organizations cut a deal with them and made a deal. They even did it in the home church I grew up in. On Sunday mornings we wore ties, and on Sunday evenings we didn't. They literally cut a deal right down the Sunday. Well, the last approach we'd suggest we need today with four generations is, now that waiting your turn doesn't work like it did before, is we have to lead through generational differences. And that's where those 5 steps come in. They help us lead through generational differences, whether it's at work or in our families, in religious organizations, or in not-for-profits that we serve. We have to lead through the generational differences.
And leading means that we're not ignoring or always trying to fix or cutting deals. I mean, that there's steps beyond that. Let's review that for a bit.
I'd suggest 5 steps for getting us through those generational differences from a leadership perspective, where we're actually involving the people who are impacted by a resolution to a sticking point. Give me an example. If you're working on dress code and the baby boomers and the traditionalists who are in charge of the organization set the policy, there's really no way that all the millennials or younger Xers are going to think that that policy makes any sense, because they're going to think that the people who made it are simply don't understand the needs of their generations, or making too big of a deal of it. In the chapter on dress code in the book, talk about a company that literally had just been dealing with that for a year. And no matter what they came up with, people were angry and upset about it. Well, these five steps allow you to bring representatives from each of the generations together and have them help sort through what's the best approach we can have, so that they can then go back and explain to people of their own generation, hey, well, why not? Here's how we came to that decision, so that the leaders aren't suddenly trying to defend what they've done, but the people who are representative of those generations can go back and talk to their own members, their own peers in that generation, and do a much better job communicating why the decisions were made and why they're relevant. So five steps. Number one, acknowledge. First, we have to acknowledge that there's generational differences and put them out on the table. Number two, appreciate. We focus on the why and not the what. So we appreciate the generational differences rather than trying to fix or cut a deal. Number three is flex. We flex for the differences in the generations rather than trying to make somebody do it our way. Number four, we leverage the generational differences, because each generation brings a perspective to solving problems or to more effectively serving other people that allows us to improve what we're doing. Number five, there are some times when flexing alone isn't enough. Many times all we have to do is flex and we can come up with a solution. But sometimes flexing alone isn't enough, and we're going to have to decide on the one way we're going to do it going forward. And in those cases, a team can come up with a resolution that makes sense to everyone rather than one generation imposing their preferences on another.
How do we determine what's the difference between a preference and a necessity? I mean, how do we actually get to that? Is that something where we
That's kind of a tricky one, isn't it? Okay, Thank you for asking that question, though, because so often our own generational preferences cloud our ability to tell what's a necessity and what's not. And so in the book, we talk about two criteria. A generational preference is what comes most natural, what feels best to my generation. But a necessity is something that's essential for the organization to go forward. And the way I like to say it is, there are only a few organizational business necessities. Everything else is generational preference. And so the easiest way to keep your own biases from getting in your way is to look at, will I lose money? If I'm going to lose money from it, then it's suddenly an organizational necessity. Am I going to lose a toe? And so that's just a bit of a macabre way of saying, if I'm going to endanger, you know, I always joke, steel-toed flip-flops defeat the purpose of it. So if you're in a warehouse, you're going to need to wear some steel-toed boots on that, and that's just a safety thing. And so in hospitals, flip-flops don't make sense because of bloodborne pathogens and the danger of needles and keeping things sterilized. And so sometimes there's a physical risk to it. Sometimes there's a financial risk to it. Funding, if you have donors and your donors think that you're not professional, you're not having a business impact because of the way you're dressed. They might not be fair in their estimation, but if your donors no longer give you funding, then that's a business impact. And so money, will you lose money? Will you lose a toe? Will you lose funding? Or will you lose a customer on the business side of things? And I always joke that I wouldn't give my investment money to a banker that wasn't in a tie, because I want to know they're suffering just a little bit if they're going to take my money.
Sure.
But the truth of it is, I hand over my money to a guy that hasn't worn a tie in 20 years. He just happens to be one of my son's best friend's father, and he's published books and is considered a money managing expert. And so I joke about that, but here he is wearing Hawaiian shirts and dressing rather casually. He's just really good at what he does. And so I've learned to adjust my expectations for clothing to compensate in compensation for his great skill.
And you still have all your toes, right? So you're okay.
And
though.
I've
so,
got all
yeah,
my toes.
Okay, good. All right. That's
good. I'm a boomer. I'm
okay.
on the boomer side of this, of this Gen X thing. And so I honestly, as I say in the book, believe that men have ugly feet. But I know that's generational. Boomers wore tennis shoes. They didn't wear sandals. It was the Xers that brought men in Birkenstocks to us all.
As a boomer myself, I'm enjoying our discussion today with Hayden Shaw. I hope you are as well. Hayden Shaw is a leading expert on understanding generational differences and transforming negative work environments in employees.
Stay tuned. More of the best of Connecting Faith in just moments. Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
It's 32 past the hour, and today we're learning about generational differences, and particularly how to get four generations working together in the 12 places they come apart. And that's the subtitle of a new book called Sticking Points, written by Hayden Shaw, who is a business executive. He's been working with the companies, in fact, more than 1,500 businesses, from Fortune 500 companies to startups and not-for-profits and government agencies, and spoken to thousands of people. And does a lot of work. He's full-time speaker and consultant for Franklin Covey, specializing in leadership execution, personal productivity methodologies. And we're summarizing some of the great insights in his book, Sticking Points, something that he's been working on for a number of years. In fact, Hayden lives in a multi-generational household in Chicago, so he can deal with it every day at home. And maybe that's where some of us are finding it interesting, because it's almost like, you know, getting along with our adult children. There's a lot of similarities there, I guess. And I'm interested in, you know, if these are generalizations, or are there sort of exceptions to the rules, Hayden? Or, I mean, what we've talked about, that we can pretty much, because I would assume that if you're close to maybe one, if you're not quite a boomer, or you're almost a millennial, that, you know, that you may be thinking a little bit differently than your cohort.
Well, no, that's exactly right. For example, I'm right there on the edge between Xers and boomers. And my wife likes to joke that I have the worst of both generations. I overwork like a boomer, and I'm cynical and a bit sarcastic like an Xer. So she likes to joke about that. Every generation has what marketers call cusps, people who have characteristics of both, because, of course, there's no start and stop date. And our President Obama was the first president to ask for a BlackBerry. And they had to set that up so that it would be secure and the president could continue using that. So he campaigned much more like an Xer even than he did a boomer. And so you find those folks who are kind of on the edge of a generation, and they'll have characteristics of both. So that's right. People who are right there on the cusp don't necessarily match completely everyone else in their generation.
It seems like in this book, it's a challenge for leadership, especially to be aware, and then not to just simply to let things go, or just, you know, to just say, well, that's the way it is. You quote Colin Powell talking about, you know, his one of the secrets to leadership, and he basically said, well, it's caring for your soldiers. So is this really a challenge for leaders to wake up to the new reality?
I think many leaders have been pursuing what Franklin Covey sometimes calls leadership 3.0. And that is that leadership is about engaging people. It's about caring for people. And my favorite quotation I've ever heard from Colin Powell is when he was asked what makes a great leader, he said, you have to love your soldiers. And I know that doesn't sound love your soldiers doesn't sound that military-like, but it really is at the core of great leadership. One of my colleagues' husbands had been there with him in the first Gulf War as part of communications. And he said, with other generals, we had an entire room full of backup documentation. With Powell, we had one filing cabinet because he trusted us and we trusted him, and he could have asked us to do anything, any hour of any day without an explanation, and we would have gone because we knew he loved us and we were willing to follow him anywhere. So I think there have been leaders who have got that leadership 3.0, but I think it used to be optional. You could have a very successful company and not really care about people. They could just be parts that you could replace. But today, with four generations, you simply can't manage four generations. It just breaks down. You can't cut enough deals, to go back to our earlier conversation. And so leadership is the only way forward. Truly loving people, caring people, and serving people is the only way to make all four generations work and get stuff done.
Let's maybe talk about some of those 12 sticking points, from communication to decision making, dress code. We've sort of touched on some of them, but I'm wondering, is there one sticking point that if it's not addressed, all others remain issues?
Respect. Now, work ethic comes up the most, but respect is the foundational sticking point. Because for years, for centuries, respect was something that went to the person who was older. And there are still cultures in the world, for example, in China, where a respect is automatically given to the people who are older. Whereas, as younger generations enter the workforce, they're redefining respect because the world they grew up in redefined respect. Let me illustrate. Younger generations, millennials especially, that youngest generation of the workforce, they'll show up and they'll get either told or it will be implied, you need to sit there with your hands inside the bus and keep quiet until you've been here 5 or 6 years and somebody else with more experience gives you permission to speak or ask for your ideas. But they're used to contributing now. They want to contribute now. And so the idea that respect has to be earned over time makes sense to older generations, but doesn't make sense to younger generations who've been in grade school classrooms doing group problem solving, or better yet, have gone through peer coaching so they could do conflict resolution with their classmates when they were in fourth grade. And so that greater focus on self-esteem, the greater focus in parenting, that they received on dialogue with your parents rather than as long as you live in this house, you're going to do it our way. Greater focus on dialogue has simply changed the expectations for respect, and the generations, in many cases, just aren't getting each other when they come into the workplace.
Because we're all about sort of meetings and policies, aren't we?
A lot greater. Well, for baby boomers, policy was an explanation. Now, sometimes the millennials are called Generation Y. People often ask, well, what's this Generation Y? Well, Generation Y is just another name for the millennial generation. They're different publications use either one of those. But I think instead of calling them Generation Letter Y, we ought to call this youngest generation in the workplace Generation WHY. Because they were taught it was okay to ask why, whereas previous generations were taught it was disrespectful to ask an older person why. And so the younger generation comes in and says, well, why is that the policy? And boomers are like, I don't know, I don't have any of that in my notes. Because for a boomer, policy was an explanation. Why do we have to work Saturday? It's policy. All right. Well, if it's policy. Policy was an explanation for boomers. It's not an explanation for the youngest generation. They need a reason for it. And so I think Generation Y is a great name for them, but Generation WHY makes it easy to remember that we need to be able to explain the whys and not just assume.
I was wondering, we asked if, you know, one sticking point that if not addressed, all others remain issues, talk about respect as a foundational. Is there one that if we do address can sort of cover others?
Respect is one of those that will help cover some others as well. And so is communication, because decision making relates to communication. Feedback grows out of communication. Meetings grow out of communication, and even to a degree, training can grow out of communication. So communication is one of the foundational sticking points. And part of communication is just understanding how the different generations approach it. I start off the chapter on communication with the story of Maria Prestevoff, who was up in Alaska and was in her backyard walking in her garden, and she was smoking a cigarette and texting and wasn't paying attention. And when she flicked her cigarette butt, she slipped in her garden on some wet grass. But unfortunately, she was on the edge of a 60-foot cliff. And she recovered, and she's happily married now. But it was certainly a scare, because the tide was literally coming in right where she fell, and they only had about 15 minutes to rescue her before the tide came in. And so it's a sad but humorous story of what will happen when we're not paying attention while we're texting on cell phones. And traffic accidents with pedestrians are up because people are busy texting and not looking where they're walking. And so new communication tools are changing the way we communicate and complicating some of those other some of those other sticking points. So if we can deal with communication, it'll have real impact on some of those other communication-oriented sticking points.
Well, let's use cell phones as an example. In a meeting with a boomer leader, is it okay to have our laptops out, our cell phones, our iPhones, whatever, and busy, texting, carry on business, or maybe even earbuds in the ears?
Well, that's a great question.
And so how would we work through that issue that came up?
Just
hypothetically, of course.
Well, just hypothetically. So funny you said that, because that's actually the story that kicks off Chapter 3. And it was one of the regions within Franklin Covey. I changed the manager's name. But I was just with her last week and gave her a copy of the book. And I said, hey, Marianne, here you are in Chapter 3. She said, hey, now I have to tell you, changed the entire way we lead meetings and lead the region after we had worked together in that. And I'd heard your speech and asked some questions. And she starts off, by asking the very question that you're asking here. She said to me when she was doing Q&A with a large group of people in the audience, she said, I'm an older boomer. I used to think meetings were one of my strongest features, and now the millennials are on their iPads, they're on their laptops, and what do we do with all of this? How do we make all that work? And so that's one of the biggest deals that she found, was making it all, making the meetings work with multiple generations. And she simply reworked the way they did it, because as a group, the team said, well, let's think differently about meetings. Let's begin to explore why you think we're not paying attention. And she said, well, I know you're not paying attention, because sometimes you ask me questions about things we covered. So you're often not listening when you're multitasking. And so as a result, they sat down and talked through those five steps and ended up coming to a resolution of how they'd handle meetings that work for everybody, regardless of generation.
So even though we say that we can multitask, that may not always be the case. Is that right?
Well, Franklin Covey focuses a lot on productivity and focus, just as a side note. And the research is pretty unequivocal that no one multitasks. Our brains don't multitask. We simply bounce between things, just like a computer will have multiple programs open. And some of us are better able to do that than others. But nobody multitasks well. What we do is we split our concentration. And the point of it is, many of us can listen with one ear and look at something else. But while we're doing email in a meeting, some emails will pull more concentration in, and as a result, we won't be able to listen as well. And so the point of it is, nobody multitasks. We do split our attention, and some things don't require our full attention, but when something comes up that does, it can sidetrack us, and we're not even realizing that we're not paying attention anymore. So that's the scientific basis for it. But a bigger question is, how do my colleagues interpret it? If they interpret me as being rude and disrespectful, as my multitasking causing tensions in the team, that we need to stop and clarify. And that's exactly what that team of people did. The younger millennials said, well, I had no idea you were interpreting that as not paying attention or disrespectful. We like your meetings. We thought we were being more productive. Don't you want us to be more productive? So they sat down and talked through the different needs they had in meetings and the different goals they had for meetings, and came up with a pretty clear agreement on how the different generations would handle meetings together and what would be okay and what would not. So they began to allow computers sometimes, as long as people could prove that they were paying attention. The real secret is to work through that five-step process and talk about it rather than talk with each other about it. That really is simply it. Bringing it up, acknowledging it, rather than talking around the sides, because it's the side conversations and the stereotypes that really mess us up.
So as a manager, if I want to communicate with Ryan, my millennial, I send him a text probably, but if I want one of my coworkers, I send him an email, and if I want to talk to my boss, I go talk to him in person. Is it a matter of us sort of communicating in a way that's most easy to understand for those that we're talking to?
That's precisely right. Just like if we went to another country, we would learn the language of people in that another country. When we work with another generational country, we learn the communication language that makes most sense to them, that's most familiar to them. And we can simply give them the invitation. Ryan, text, Ryan, Got a big question? Give me a call. And I learned to do that with my kids in college. I learned that they weren't going to answer my call, and they were more likely to answer my text. And if I really did want to talk to them, I learned a special code text message. Hi, reconsidering paying for college, call quickly. And so that became a code message that meant call the old man, even if he just wants to chat.
I think that was point four. I think that was leverage, wasn't that what that was?
That's right, it was leverage. But Neil, ironically, my son, who's a sophomore in college, his answer on voicemail on his cell phone goes something like this. I won't get it word for word, but it says, "Hi, this is Max. You're leaving a message. Why? When you could be texting." Okay, but I may not call you back. Please reconsider texting. And so the fact that he's incredulous that you would leave a voice message with him as part of his response to your voice message just shows that big generational difference.
We're learning about generational differences, big and small, particularly as it affects the workplace. This is the first time in American history that we've had four different generations working side by side. And Hayden Shaw, who's a business speaker and generational expert, has written about it in a great book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. And we'll hear some more with Hayden in just a moment here on Connecting Faith.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Are you new to the station? Well, welcome. It's great to have you tuning in. We have a new listener packet that's designed for friends just like you. It tells you a little bit about the station, who we are, why we exist, and what we're hoping to accomplish in the Upper Midwest. It's yours free for the asking at myfaithradio.com. Check it out. It's myfaithradio.com. It's the new listener packet. Request yours today.
You can help make people rich, and it has nothing to do with money. Complete your degree in health psychology with a concentration in applied behavior analysis. Prepare to work in homes and hospitals, clinics and classrooms, helping people with autism, aggression, or various conduct and behavior disorders. Build lives that are truly rich. Learn about this accelerated online program at unwsp.edu. University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Learn. Lead. Invest. Impact.
Welcome back to an encore presentation, The Best of Connecting Faith, on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired program.
About 49 past the hour, talking today with Hayden Shaw, leading expert on understanding generational differences and transforming negative work environments in employees. He's a business consultant and author of the new book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. It's from Shaw, a division of Tyndale. And he's with Franklin Covey, the speaker and consultant with Franklin Covey. Ryan and I were just talking during the break that he's not been calling his mom enough, and she would appreciate you just phoning home once, right?
That's true. I didn't know you were going to say it on the radio,
well,
but yes,
no, I just think,
very fair.
Didn't we talk early on about respect? I mean, shouldn't you just...
Right.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Mom, I love you, Mom.
But learn how to text. That's the key. So.
Before you go any further, let me read Ryan the very last two paragraphs of the book.
Okay.
So you already know more about how to speak other generations' languages than you realize. This book has merely helped you tap into it. So call your mom. Ryan, let me just put your name insert there right in the book. So call your mom. She'll appreciate a text, but she really wants to talk to you. Mm. Or quit complaining that your kids never call. Send them a text message about something funny that happened to you today. Get the chat going. I bet they'll text you back. So, Ryan, there you go. You're right there in the back of the book, man.
That's
right.
Good.
Right.
Thank you.
Good. So, does this have to be difficult? Do we really make it harder than it is because we're maybe unwilling to flex or acknowledge? I mean, we just think, well, my preferences are, or we have stereotypes, maybe.
The stereotypes, Neil, are what kill us. Because the stereotypes are like urban legends. Now, there is one actual documented time when an alligator was found in the sewers of New York City. But because of that one actual fact, there is now this whole urban legend that there are alligators in the sewers of New York, albino alligators that feed on stuff down in the sewers. And, of course, New York is too cold much of the year to support alligators, but that legend still lives on based around that tiny kernel of truth. Well, the same thing happens with generations. For example, there is this urban legend about generations that the youngest generation, millennials, want to work from home or from Starbucks. And while it is true they want flexible hours, millennials actually want to work away from the office less than the other three generations. Millennials know that in order to get FaceTime, in order to get mentoring, that they're going to have to be there in person. Now, they don't want to have to come in every day, 9 to 5, but neither does any other generation. So there's this urban legend that the millennials are the I want to be able to work from anywhere generation, and the research simply doesn't support it. But a lot of executives, PricewaterhouseCoopers, big CEO study found, a lot of executives are banking on flexible work arrangements as a way to attract the younger generations, when really it's just a way to retain their parents, as they're now trying to juggle aging parents as well as their own kids. So it's just an example of an urban legend that builds up, where a newspaper article passes on something that's not quite true, and suddenly people are thinking that that's the reality of things. So you bet, stereotypes are what kills us.
So, if I get my work done in 35 hours, do I have to sit around for 40? Couldn't I, be playing on my games or something?
You know what? That's one of the biggest work ethic challenges right there is what do you do? Matter of fact, I start the book off with a woman in Houston who said to me, I got to leave now because I'm going to go fire one of the women on my team. But I got a question for you. Am I being too boomer on this? You got me thinking. And she said, this woman surfs the internet 3 hours a day. I said, that does seem excessive. Is her workload rolling over to somebody else? No, she's the most productive of any of my people. She handles more, she supports more users, and she supports more software programs than anyone else on the team. So no, she's not. She's carrying her load. Well, is her quality level low then? Nope, she's rated the highest of all of the people on my team. She has the highest customer satisfaction from the people she supports. I said, so why would you fire your most productive and highest rated team member? Because she sets a bad example by surfing the internet 3 hours a day. And other people ask why they can't do it. She said, now, am I being a boomer? I said, yes, you're being a boomer, because she's getting her work done and she's doing it well. And therefore, the reward is to, we pay her for 8 hours. I said, no, you pay her to get her work done well, and she's doing that. But I've even tried to promote her to be a manager. Well, then she wouldn't be able to surf the internet 3 hours a day. Well, that's exactly right. That's what she tells me. And so we were truly having a generational clash over, are you paying by the hour or are you paying by the production? So if she can get her work done, and in this case, 25 hours a week, then the rest of the time, they were having trouble with the fact that the rest of the time was hers. I said, I bet she's told you that if you want another 15 hours a week, she would need to get a raise. It's not fair to ask her to get 15 hours more work a week done than her peers without giving her additional pay. She said, you were like listening to our email, listening in on our email. That's exactly what she was saying. I said, that's right. She measures herself by her production, and you measure her by the hours she works. Generational sticking point, and it really is time for us to quit measuring by the farm and the factory and start measuring by the electron in the information age, when it really is what you can get done and not the hours you take to do it.
So what's the workplace going to look like 10 years from now or 20 years from now? Or is there going to be a whole nother type of sticking points depending on the next generation coming up?
Undoubtedly, some of these sticking points will get greater emphasis as it goes forward. But yes, a whole new generation will come along. Nobody knows the name of it yet. Nobody knows exactly when it's going to start, but they're coming at roughly every 20 years now. And so we're extrapolating that the next generation will be coming in about 10 years. So we're estimating them to be somewhere between 10 and 12 years old. Hard to know exactly how much computer technology will shape, if they'll shape generations more quickly. But if the old patterns hold, somewhere in the next in the next 10 years, a new generation will begin to emerge. And there may not be new sticking points, but there'll definitely be a different emphasis on the sticking points we have. Because basically a sticking point comes when each generation answers the same question differently.
How do
you tell if a person's working hard? They answer that question differently.
Well, we got a couple more minutes. I don't know if I want to work any harder, if we just call it an hour here. But let's just review the five steps for leading through, though. I think that's valuable to do. We got a minute and a half or so just to give you a chance to summarize that.
You bet. Acknowledge. Get the sticking points out on the table rather than talking in stereotypes to people on your generation. Quit complaining about other generations and simply acknowledge that we see it differently. We answer the same question differently. Number two, begin to focus on why people see things the way they do, not what is different and how irritating those differences are. Focus on the why, not the what. Why's bridge, what's divide. Flex, step three, agree on how to accommodate the different approaches. Figure out, see how far you can get flexing for each generation rather than setting policies where everybody has to do it exactly the same. Number four, leverage. Look at the differences as real strengths to help us reach different markets, if we're in business, to help us serve different generations, if we're in not-for-profits or in government. And then when we need to, come together and decide on a resolution that takes everybody's needs into account on those few sticking points that we do need a resolution on.
Your website is mygenerationalcoach.com, right?
Mygenerationalcoach.com.
A great place to get some more information, and I recommend the book to you. It is really fascinating. If you're involved in a multi-generational workforce or just find some ways, maybe even just learning how to get along with your kids better, you'll find this helpful. Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. It's from Hayden Shaw. Hayden, great to visit with you today. Thanks for the great insight, and we'll see if Ryan and I can learn to get along here. I'm not sure, but we may.
Thanks for having me.
We may need another consulting trip down the road or something. So,
well, Hayden Shaw is a business consultant and a popular speaker and a generational expert, and he works full time speaking and consulting for Franklin Covey, specializing in leadership and personal productivity methodologies. Before that, he was a minister for 9 years, a seminary degree, and he's written this wonderful book we've been referencing, Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. Now, speaking of generations, coming up later today, I want to listen for someone who has lived for many generations and has great insights. Warren Wiersbe returns to Live the Promise with Susie Larson. That's coming up this afternoon at 3 o'clock. You want to be a part of that discussion. We so appreciate the statesmanship, the leadership, the biblical wisdom from Warren Wiersbe, and you'll hear more on today's Live the Promise coming up at 3 o'clock. Hey, if you missed part of today's program, you can always catch it online and share the podcast at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And just click on Connecting Faith and hope that you enjoy the conversation with Hayden Shaw on Sticking Point. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
This has been the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. To hear more engaging discussions on the intersection of faith and life, head to myfaithradio.com and click Connecting Faith.